This is episode 13 of the Porter Pickups Tonecast, and today we're going to have a chat with Steve Sterlacci, a Porter Pickups artist and guitarist for the Jessica Lynn Band. Well, welcome everybody. We're so excited that you're here for another week of the Tonecast. It's going to be a really great time. We had an awesome time talking with Steve, and it's just a great conversation. Brian, how you doing this morning?
I'm all right. I'm good. The way this landed, we're recording episode 13 before episode 12. So,
oh, don't tell them the magic.
Yeah. So the magic of the podcast is that they will all happen in perfect order. But the way that it worked out with Steve today is just kind of, that's true. The dynamic. So
he's going off to the Bahamas or something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Sounds terrible.
Well, we have some exciting things kind of coming up for this year. We already, in a previous shows, introduced some exciting things that we have for Porter Pickups this year. And so you could consider this, a continuation of that. We're working on some really exciting stuff that's been in development for quite some time. So within the next few months or so, more stuff will be leaking out, kind of what we've been working on. And we're just excited to share it with you. Kind of top secret for now, but we're excited for that.
Tip top secret. It's a classic teaser right there, man. I'm on the edge of my seat, and I know what's going on.
Well, it's hard to do a teaser knowing that it comes out, it comes out at a certain time, but not everyone may be listening in real time. So that's why we're
keeping
it. So you're
going to say there's like going to be some really disappointed people who are listening to this at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And like big news just never comes.
They'll just find the Tonecast and they'll be like, what? That's really cool. It's coming up, huh? So
that's wonderful. Well, like I said, this week we had a really great conversation with Steve Sterlacci, great guitarist in the Jessica Lynn Band. So why don't we just go ahead and cut right over to that interview?
All right. Well, hey, Steve, we're glad to have you on the Tonecast today. Just kind of want to cover a bunch of different topics today with you. We had a little audio clip from you a couple weeks ago about the anthems, and we'll get to the anthems a little more in depth later on. Just great to have you again on the show. We wanted to start with, because we are actually recording this show a week after the NAMM show. So we want to kind of start with a little bit of your thoughts on the NAMM show and kind of, what you think of the NAMM show and kind of how you see the NAMM show and kind of, what you do as an artist at the NAMM show.
Yeah, cool. First of all, thank you for having me. And, I always appreciate the show and stuff. So thank you for having me on. But the NAMM show overall, it's like, it's total insanity, but you absolutely love it, for me at least, because it's so loud. It's constantly moving. Things are constantly happening. You never know what's around the corner. But it's also such a great opportunity to meet the people behind the brands that you play, which is really the most important thing for me and the thing I look forward to most. So that's definitely, it's such a big part of it. You don't realize it until you get there. And it's something that you just need to experience. But I love going.
Very cool. Yeah, and this is kind of fun for us because we haven't really had a lot of artist types on the show. And so we have some questions kind of geared towards the artist ends of things. So maybe if you could just kind of introduce yourself. I know you already said hello, but kind of what you do and your role and who you play with, that kind of stuff.
Sure. So I'm Steve Sterlacci, and I'm from New York, and I play with a country artist named Jessica Lynn, who I'm also married to. And, we've been at this since we graduated college, basically. Both of us had gone to school first before we really wanted to go after this. So in the past couple of years, we've had two concert specials go nationwide on television, on PBS. And we've spent the last 4 years touring basically the world now. The first couple were just national. We did a bunch of country music festivals. We got to open up for Brad Paisley, and we actually got to bookend him. So we played right before and right after him. We did a bunch of other festivals, opening up for Keith Urban and stuff. And then we did a small show, we did a small run of shows with Jody Messina, where we were her supporting act. And then most recently, we opened up for Loretta Lynn who's the obviously the queen of country music, which is really cool. And now we just got booked to go to Europe again, and we'll be opening up for ZZ Top, actually, for a couple of shows over in Europe and the UK, and we're going to be out there for about a month and a half.
Nice. So being in a band and kind of going from, you know, the idea of starting a band and that beginning journey of, you know, hey, let's get some people together and play music, you know, take us through that journey to where you started it and you got off the ground, and then to where you're at now. Like, kind of, was there a transition point where it kind of really took the next level jump, or how would you describe kind of that journey so far?
So Jessica has been doing this since she's 14. So she's been, you know, grinding for, you know, before we started doing this, like 10 years before we even started. So she's always kind of, she's had the experience of doing this, you know, and knowing what it takes to get to certain levels and stuff. And then once we got, you know, finished with college and stuff, that's when she decided to really push Jessica Lynn as the thing, I guess, that we're going for. But we kind of took a backdoor route, and we had a PBS special go on the air first before anything. So Jessica's father, who was also a classical composer like Yanni, similar to Yanni, so he had a concert special on PBS also that went to number two in the country. So he had this great idea to start Jessica's career by filming a PBS show just like his and pitching it to the PBS stations that he already had the contacts with. So that's kind of how Jessica Lynn got started. It's kind of like a backdoor weird approach, but before we even had any recorded material, we had a concert special on television.
Nice. So it was less about like the try to get the demo in the hands of producer or show booker or anything like that. It was just like, that's pretty interesting.
It's got to be a pretty good way to go these days anyways.
Well, yeah, that's the big thing is that, like you said, these days is a great term to use, because how many people are doing that same route, you know? How hard is it to get seen? How hard is it to get somebody to open your album that you send, or your tracks that you send? Like, open your email, because these people are getting dozens and dozens or hundreds of, you know, submissions a day. So it's different for us. We say, hey, here's a DVD, a copy of our television special. And it seems to get some attention. And that's really how we got kickstarted.
Nice. So do you think people, because of that, they kind of look at you differently, you know, in terms of like what you have to offer, because you have like a legitimate thing already?
Definitely. It definitely is, I guess, like an icebreaker, but it's also something that like shows immediately that you're legitimate. Like it immediately legitimizes you as an artist or as a player, because, oh, well, they're on TV. They already have something, as opposed to, hey, we're really working on something. We're trying to push this. You can hand them something concrete that's already existing.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I know for us, like, we get this question every once in a while, but I'm sure you get it way more than us. You know, everybody kind of wants to know, for people out there that want to do what you do, and maybe, you know, not specifically with the band, but even just playing guitar for a living or whatever, kind of, do you have any advice for people that want to get into that are looking kind of to move that direction?
Am I allowed to curse?
Well, we have an explicit filter on the show, so.
You know. Rule number one is don't be an a-hole. For me, that's rule number one. I don't care if you're the greatest player in the world or if you're someone who just has a severe passion for it. If you're a complete jerk, then you're never going to, in my opinion, be successful. So a big part of winding up playing guitar for a living is definitely don't expect to be rich doing it right away. So that's a huge part of it, is don't join a band expecting them to change your life and, you know, bring you all sorts of money, because that's such an unrealistic view of the job. So until you get to a certain level, you're probably not going to be able to make a living. So if you're not able to make a living at the moment, don't feel bad about it, because it's not it's not realistic, unfortunately, to be, you know, unless you're at a certain level, really being able to make a living playing the guitar. So that being said, I do side jobs when I'm home. You know, I have to. It's just the nature of, you know, being a guitar player, I do what I love, yes, for most of my job, but there's also other things I have to do in order to support myself. So a lot of people think that once they join a band, or if they join a band, that they're going to be rich and, you know, oh, great, I'm a rock star now. I play, you know, X amount of shows a year. So that'll be able to, you know, make me, help me live and support me. And that's an unrealistic thing. We wind up, you know, we've had people come and go in bands over the years that always have a certain expectation of, oh, what's the money like? That's always like one of the first questions. And for me, that's just, I think it's the wrong approach, because I think the more that you commit to something you believe in, the better chance you have to become successful. A lot of people just expect it to be, I'm going to join and all of a sudden the success is there and I'm going to be super rich and, you know, everything's going to be great.
So yeah, it sounds like the same, like, you know, I want to start a gear company so I can make a bunch of money. You know, it's like,
yeah,
almost the same. You know, it's like, I'm not going to get rich maybe doing what I do, but I love doing it. And you're right, it's kind of similar in the fact that it just takes consistent effort. It takes a little bit of, you know, jumping out in faith to say, okay, here we go, let's give this a shot, you know, and also take some good connections and good, like, good fortune in the way that, like, you meet these certain people that want to buy pickups from you and you create these networks and stuff like that. I'm curious, you know, early on when I started playing, we did a few little small, like, regional kind of touring type things. And I never really enjoyed the touring life all that much, mostly because I'm not a big travel guy. But what is touring life like? Maybe take us through, like, a typical month for the band, or just kind of your general thoughts on, like, the touring life.
Okay, so where do we start? Do we start from, like, earlier days or current days?
I would say current, just because you probably are busier now than you were when you started, I assume.
Okay, so where we're at now, we usually, and we don't do, we're totally independent, okay, just to clarify. We don't have any record label funding or, you know, major type of backing for what we do. So everything we make money doing stuff, and it's reinvested back into this project. So we try to make it as affordable, but as also as comfortable as possible. So what we do is we rent an RV, and trust me, that's a high upgrade from what we started, but we have an RV and a trailer, and it's just, we just hit the road. I mean, we spend most of our time driving because we get these great shows because we've developed a good relationship with these country festivals and with certain venues around the country. Usually we have anchor dates, which are, you know, well-paying festivals that are either going to feed us for a good amount of time, or they're going to be good exposure, like opening up for Brad Paisley. Like, that type of thing is something you can't say no to. So we usually find a couple of bookends like that, not bookends, a couple of anchor dates like that. And then we'll fill in, you know, whatever we can in between to keep us fed. So we'll hit the road in the RV, and it's very packed because we travel with a lot of people. We usually have at least 8 and up to 13 with us at a time. So it's definitely very tight in that RV, and we pull the trailer, and it's a lot of driving. But I personally, I love driving. I'm the one who wants to jump up and volunteer to drive, especially in Montana. I love driving through, you know, the country and seeing the different, you know, different states, different landscapes and stuff. So I don't mind that part as much, but it makes playing so much more fun because it's finally your relief, and you finally get to let it out. Like, yes, okay, this is what I've been, you know, struggling the last couple of days, you know, cranking this out, but now I'm here and I'm here to do what I want to do. So it makes playing more honest, I guess, is a way to put it.
Sure. And so when you travel, I assume that you try to make sure you bring all your favorite gear with you and all that stuff. Or do you often use, like, all your own stuff every show, or do you use some backline stuff at different venues?
Okay, so if we have our trailer, I'm allowed to bring, you know, pretty much whatever I want. That also gets into, okay, that's the worst situation ever, because now I have to decide what to leave home for a month.
That's true. I didn't think about that.
It's not really what do I want to play for a month. It's more of what am I not going to play for a month. And then I'm looking at my guitars and I feel bad for ones that I'm going to leave behind. So
distress process. My wife just
turned the TV on before you leave home, just so they're not alone. Yeah, feeling
leave some water and a little dog food for it or something.
Exactly, like some string cleaner next to them,
just in case you got like someone coming to the house. Say, hey, they're like, hey, can you take care of my guitars for me?
You just have to check in 3 times a day.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like my wife is looking at, you know, outfit, stage outfits. She's like, what should I wear? I'm like, what guitar should I play? I don't know.
it's all perspective, right? You know, it's like, so when you go, I'm curious about like, so the average, like what's usually your dilemma when you're leaving something behind? Like, is it like, do I leave, you know, this guitar at home versus this guitar? Kind of take us through that like conversation.
Okay. So the first thing is, well, I'm at the point now gear-wise where I do like all of my gear. So all of my stuff I feel like is at a certain level where I thoroughly enjoy playing it and it can all sound good and work in the music. So what it comes down to after that, and I guess it comes with endorsements also, is these companies have invested in me to play their type of stuff on the road and to promote their brand. So that comes... that holds a lot of weight in my decision, as opposed to, you know, some guitars I've paid for, and if I like them equally, then the endorser guitar obviously gets the nod instead. So that definitely goes into it, but the sound and the playability are pretty much consistent throughout my guitars. They all have their own applications that I could use 15 guitars on in a set, but that's obviously not realistic.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, you touched on it a little bit with the endorsements idea, but we've actually been kind of talking to a lot of different people on the podcast about endorsements. But since you're the first artist we have on, maybe kind of explain from your angle, what do endorsements do for you? And then also kind of how do you feel like your relationship back to the company is benefiting kind of them? Maybe even talk about some of the companies that you are endorsed by. We'd love to hear.
Sure. Okay. So endorsements for me at first, and again, this is, you know, a couple years ago, my first two NAMM shows was like, oh my God, I can't wait to get endorsed by companies. Like, oh my God, I want to go and like try to find all these companies and get endorsed by them. And I think that was the wrong way to go about it. It's not that it was like, not saying that I was wrong, but it wasn't the best approach in my opinion. So what I've more tried to focus on now is companies that I do love and that I do appreciate and that I would play without an endorsement or an artist pricing or, you know, free gear, whatever it is. I try to find companies that I would have paid for anyway. And narrowing that down was definitely helpful because it was craziness doing it the other way. But so I first look for a company that I want to play. I want to use their stuff and I like the people is going to be the second part. So there have been situations where I've never played someone's gear, but I've met them, like Mr. Porter, I met first before
that's
owning.
That's true. Yeah, you didn't know what you were getting into.
Nope, I had no idea. So that's a big part of it too. Sometimes I'll meet a person like you, I met first, and I was like, hey, I've heard of your stuff, yeah, but I've never actually tried it. But meeting you and liking you made me say, okay, well, I want to play these then. And they sound like crap, but you know, I'm doing all right.
Awesome. We're getting into the honest portion of the podcast now, right?
No, that one wound up working out pretty good. So
yeah, for sure.
No, I love your pickup. So, but that's another example.
Yeah. So tell me about that guitar. I know that like if anyone follows Steve on Instagram, he posts this guitar every couple days. It seems like it's kind of a big, it's kind of a big deal. It really is. It's kind of a cool guitar and a cool story. So it's got the anthems in it. So tell us about the guitar itself and kind of what's going on there.
Well, I found out some new information on it too that you haven't heard yet. So you will be the
cool
first people to hear about this.
Nice.
So this guitar I found on Instagram, believe it or not. And I saw a shop in Seattle post this picture. And I looked at it and I was like, I've never seen anything like that in my life. What is that guitar? And it's this gorgeous, like dark flame top, Les Paul custom. But it, you know, it has the double binding, it has a split diamond headstock, but it also has, we good?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, I thought something cut off. Sorry.
You're good.
Okay. So it has, you know, Super 400 inlays, which if you don't know what those are like block inlays, but they have breaks in them. So little slashes in them. And it just, it's like the coolest looking thing ever. So I looked at this thing and I was like, whatever this is, I was like, I don't know what it is, but I want it. So I started researching and I emailed the company, the guitar shop. And I said, hey, what is this guitar? And they had advertised it as the 2550 anniversary model that Gibson put out in 1979 or 78. And I started looking up pictures of that. And I was like, no, it's not. I was like, that's wrong. It's not that at all. So I'm trying to compare pictures. They had a commemorative headstock, a coil tap switch. And I was like, this doesn't have either of those. There's no way. So I knew it was something different than they were advertising for. So I was talking to the salesman. And he's like, yeah, we really don't know what it is. We're assuming that it's like a one-off or something, but it's similar to that guitar. So that's what we advertised it as. And it had some work done to it. It was refretted. The pickups were not original, but the electronics were, the pots and the capacitors and stuff. And it was also routed for a tremolo at one point, but it's been like expertly filled in that you can't even tell, which don't bother me. I'd rather pay less money for a great guitar than, you know, worry about some repair. So I bought it sight unseen. I put it on layaway once he told me that he didn't know what it was. I just took a gamble on it. So I had it for like a year. So fast forward and somebody comments on a picture. Hey, that looks like Neil Sean's guitar in the Any Way You Want It video. Okay, cool. I finally have a lead of what this is. I look up the video and sure enough, Neil Sean is playing an almost identical guitar to mine in the video. And one of the most, the telltale feature of it is that it has binding on the horn. I don't know if you know what I'm necessarily talking about. So Les Paul has like the cutaway with like that tip underneath, like the, I guess the 13th fret or 12th fret. And there's a little spot where there's binding around it. It's unusual. If you look at my Instagram, you'll see it, but, Neil Sean has that same one. So I was like, okay, great. I finally have a lead. And that was it though. That's all I found on it. So I still had nothing. And then a couple weeks ago, I saw G-Bass, the company, it's almost like a, you know, buy and sell for guitar gear, posted a picture of one that looked just like mine. And I was like, holy crap, that's my guitar. So I finally found it, and there was a bunch of information and a price of $30,000. And I was like, holy crap. So that's where I was before this week at NAMM. And it was like, oh my God, like I just stepped in complete crap and got, I'm like the luckiest guy in the world because I didn't pay anywhere near that. But it was definitely cool when I first saw that article. And I actually called the salesman who was selling that. He's up in Canada. It cost me $15 to talk with him, but it was worth it.
That's awesome. So what's the new news from NAMM then?
Okay, so I was fighting with myself. Do I want to bring it to NAMM? Do I not want to? It's such a, you know, and now, of course, like you said, I post about it every couple of days. So everybody knows what it is now. All my followers, at least. So we play at the Tascam booth. And, you know, I pull it out and this guy immediately runs over to me that works at Tascam. And he's like, dude, what is that? What kind of Les Paul is that? So I explained it and stuff. He's like, I have to take you upstairs. Like, I want to bring you right to Gibson and show this to them because I know everybody up there would love to see this. So I'm like, normally I wouldn't even go to Gibson ever because NAMM at Gibson is like insane. Same thing with Fender, Gretsch, and like all the major guitar brands are like madhouse. You can't even like do anything in there. Basically, you're going to a guitar center and looking. So I never planned on going to Gibson, Fender, or any of like the big, you know, the big names. So he tells me Tascam is part owned by Gibson or majority owned by Gibson. So I was like, okay, cool. So he brings me up there and brings me right to one of his, like the product experts. And he says, you got to see this guitar. So I pull it out, I show him and he goes, oh, that's the Any Way You Want It guitar. I was like, oh my God, somebody finally knows what it is. So he actually thinks that he's like, have you ever like compared this to Neil Sean's exact guitar? And I was like, not, you know, not really. He played it in, you know, 1979 to I guess 81. So all the video and the pictures are really crappy. And he's like, you know, he put a tremolo in this at one point, right? And I was like, no, I didn't know that. And mine's routed for a tremolo. But mine, again, it's repaired. But he's looking at it and he's like, you need to compare this to Neil Sean's actual guitar. I was like, okay, worth a shot. Why not? So I've started, you know, really, really researching as many videos as I could find. So not to get totally, you know, geek on this right now, but Neil Sean put white plastic on his, like white plastic and gold knobs. And coincidentally, mine has non-Gibson branded plastic on it. So mine, I have aftermarket black plastic on mine that I got it with. And mine was routed for a tremolo, as was Neil Sean's.
Nice.
So it's like, so
the evidence is adding up.
It's adding up, definitely. And he actually is, he brought me right to another, you know, Gibson employee. And it was actually pretty cool. They like put me like in like their like VIP lounge or whatever. So I got like their special badge. They gave us like free lunch and stuff. So it was pretty cool there.
Nice.
But he brings me up to this other guy and he's like, oh, he works directly with Neil Sean's guitar tech, like his the guy who's done his guitar work in San Francisco. I was like, oh, cool. He's like, so I show him and he goes, yeah, it looks really familiar. He's like, just send me pictures with the serial number and stuff and I'll send it to my buddy. He'll run the serial number, and if it was Neil Sean's, it'll be in his database. So I'm just hoping.
So you're waiting for that news then, huh? Have you done all that?
I haven't sent it yet because obviously when you're done with NAMM, it's like you need a couple weeks to
decompress, right?
But for me, I'm sitting here like a child every day, like looking at pictures, like, should I send this one? Should I send this one? When do I send it? But I got to wait, and I'm going to wait, you know. He said to wait, so I'm gonna wait. But yeah, that's my big news from you know, that came out of there.
That's,
I was
pretty
like,
cool. Maybe we'll have to have a follow up, like an update show where we. What's funny is that the day that we're recording this is like about a week early from when it'll be published. So maybe if you have any news within a week, we can kind of add a little update at the end of the show before we launch it. So that might be kind
as
of
long
fun.
As good news. As long as it's good news.
As long as it's good news.
I'm really wondering if this kind of means that in a roundabout way, we can put Neil Sean on our artist page.
Technically.
That's what I'm really thinking.
There's got to be some weird connection there. So besides that guitar, because we always like talking gear and kind of what gear you have, when you go through like a typical set, what kind of gear do you like to use? Maybe, you know, quick rundown of guitars, amps, effects, that kind of stuff.
Is this ideal situation or most situations?
How about ideal situation? Yeah. So maybe stuff that you really would
stuff
just play.
Stuff you can't live without.
Yeah.
Okay. It always depends on the song for me. I don't just like play whatever guitar for whatever reason, just because I like it. I usually try to either tone match the record or, you know, like if we're doing, like we always cover, actually coincidentally, before we were opening up for ZZ Top, we always opened with Tush or closed with Tush, ZZ Top. So I almost always have my Les Paul, either or. I have a 96 Classic and I have the one that we've been talking about. So a Les Paul is almost always a lock for me. And if I'm ever doing another gig, like I also do like when I'm home, I do like a party dance band, and my Les Pauls are always my first grab, almost always. So either Les Paul are always definitely number one. And after that, obviously doing country stuff, I need a good telly. So ideally, again, I'd like to switch, you know, play my Les Paul on one song and play the other Les Paul on another one. And then I have three tellies that I love. So if I could alternate between the three when I need them. I have one with a B-bender, so I'll use that on songs where, you know, that would be cool. Not always required because it's such a unique sound, but some songs it really comes out cool on. But I have a signature guitar with, you know, Santo Guitar USA, and that's like my modern Telecaster, where it's like, it sounds great, but it looks like super modern. And I actually have your custom tele set in that. So that's another good one. It's got a Bigsby and everything, so it's more like a modernized tele. And then, again, you mentioned Iconic before. So I also have an Iconic custom guitars. They basically made me a 1952 Telecaster, which I totally am in love with. So whenever we do an old school style song or, you know, something that really requires that twang, that's my go-to for that.
Okay, what else do I have? Just trying to go through. That's usually like my touring guitars. Any one of those, I guess what I mentioned, five. Any one of those five would be out with me at all times. But usually, it's definitely a Les Paul and definitely a Tele. Usually, if I could bring, like, to NAMM, I bring two guitars. I brought Tele and a Les Paul. That's usually it.
Nice.
But ideally, I'd bring all five.
What about amps? Where are you sitting with your amps?
Right now, I have, as my go-to, and this thing, it's been reliable for me, and it's been, you know, great, but I'm a little nervous taking it on the road. But I'm playing a 73 Deluxe Reverb.
Nice.
Which might bring me to my next point. I spent a lot of time with John Snyder at Creation Music Company. And this is going to be shameless plug because I'm already one of his artists for his pedal boards. But we were talking about amps, and he just, I don't know if you guys were familiar with Risen Amp.
Yeah.
He purchased that company. So now he is releasing his amplifier line, and he debuted them at NAMM, and they sounded really, really, really great. So we're talking about possibly getting one on the road with us.
Very cool. Nice. So are you going to do something kind of in that like big clean sound realm with them? I know that like,
yes.
I kind of had a little bit of, you know, I know the Risen guys and I know John as well. So it's kind of cool to see kind of Risen Amp sort of become this other thing and kind of move on in life, I guess.
Yeah, but, no, same here. I was talking to Lucas actually right before it. I was like, hey, you know, we want to try to get, you know, Risen Amps on the road with us. And next thing we know, it's like, oh, cool. My pedal board company just bought that. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And I mean, I assume that like, I know good things of the Risen stuff. And so I'm excited to kind of hear what's coming out of John's shop there with Creation for sure. Are you getting something within the next little bit here, or what's kind of the timeline of you getting that amp?
That's to be determined right now. We don't know yet. I went down, obviously, you know, me and John have a relationship already, so I'm already using his pedal board, and you know, we really wanted to get both for both of our sakes, because I love the way it sounds and because he wants, you know, to expand his, you know, roster. So it looks very promising that, you know, that's going to be happening in one way, shape, form or another.
Nice. But yeah,
the big clean and, you know, relying on pedals for the rest of the stuff.
Nice. And you said you've got a Creation board. Is there anything on the board that's just like an absolute, it doesn't matter where I am, I got to have this one?
Oh man.
you like how we're trying to narrow you down, and it's like the yeah. worst thing in the world for a musician to yeah. like pick their favorites.
Yeah, it's like actually guitar player specifics. That's great. Okay, now I feel like I'm just like rambling this entire time.
It's like I like this one pedal, and then you launch into like 55 other pedals. You know, it's like we understand.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're expecting
this. Yeah. There's no judgment here,
Steve. If anyone's made it this far through the podcast, we're on 13 now. They just want to listen to Gear Talk for like 10 hours straight. So you're good.
Okay. So what's my favorite pedal? Let's start there. How about that? My favorite.
There we go.
Like this is my absolute favorite, but this guy TSW pedals, and he's still relatively unknown. He actually just had his third kid, so he just moved to North Carolina, so he's been not necessarily out of it, but you know, kind of, you know, being a family guy, every time you have a kid you slow down a little bit. But he made me this, and he calls it the Stalach drive. Actually, it's like he put my custom graphic on it and stuff. It's a plexi type circuit and a tube screamer type circuit in one pedal, and that's like my most complimented tone if I ever get one. that's usually what it's on is, hey, what was that dirty channel? Because they see a Fender amp and then they hear this like really great, you know, really huge distortion sound. Like, what is that? What is that? That's usually it is my TSW. I think he calls it his Dragon Slayer is the circuit that he uses, but that's definitely my favorite tone that I get out of a pedal. And I mean, I could move on from there, but it's up to you guys. You ask me, how about this? You ask me and I'll answer. So it doesn't
okay,
seem like I'm just,
let's say, okay, if that's like your go-to, like let's get your top five or something like that. Can we do that?
Sure. So pedals or gear in general?
Pedals.
Okay. So that's number one, and that's actually a doubled pedal. So that
you know, that we're talking good stuff here.
That's okay.
So that's number one.
You like how he slides in a double pedal? It's like, so it doesn't count as two.
Just actually have an enclosure that has 17 drives in it.
But beyond that, I got a Keeley Tone Workstation. I actually got that. They were nice enough to send it to me out on the road last year, and that goes on my small board. And that's got, I have a review on my YouTube channel, shameless plug, but that's cool. It's got, you know, Robert's compressor, a clean boost / plexi circuit. I use the clean boost, but, and then the third is a modified tube screamer type of sound, and it's all in one tiny pedal. So for practicality and great sound, that's a good one. I'd say that's probably my number two favorite overall. Okay, number three, what do we got? I'm in love with my Line 6 Echo Park lately. I don't know if you're familiar with those.
And I love that pedal. It's such an underrated pedal.
Yeah. And it's like, you get them for under $100 on, you know, Reverb or eBay or something. It's like, why do people not use this? It's got the tap tempo on the top. You don't have two separate buttons. It's so easy to use and it sounds great.
It was awesome.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Now I'm reminiscing. I need to get one of those back now.
Sorry. Yeah, I was watching a bunch of Tim Pierce stuff. I think he's like the freaking, he's just the man. I don't know if you watch any of Tim Pierce's stuff, but he was like, I swear by this pedal. This guy's playing in every major record in LA and he's using this under $100 pedal. I was like, this thing's got to be at least pretty good. So that's how I bought it. And I haven't looked back.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Okay. Other than that one, I've been definitely in love with my Dunlop mini volume pedal. They just came out with that, I think, last year. Uh-huh. And for practicality's sake, it's awesome. And I don't know what else I could say about a volume pedal, but it sounds great. It doesn't suck any tone. You could also use it as an expression pedal, but it's just solid. It works and it's small, which is the more important factor for me.
Nice.
Okay. That one's kind of boring to talk about, but.
All right. This is number five. You got to make it count. We can't go any more than this. Five.
Okay. Pressure's on. See, I'm trying to think, do I go feature packed or do I go simple? It's a tough one. Okay. I'll quickly glance over one as an honorable mention before I get to number five.
You broke the rules already.
You never said anything that couldn't do honorable mentions, though.
Okay, fine. You're right.
The guy who made that double drive, TSW, he also makes a spring reverb pedal, and it's probably the best spring reverb. It's simple. It doesn't have a million knobs. I don't have to fiddle with it. I put it on a setting I like, and I can just leave it alone. So I do love that. But if my number five is going to be my Line 6 M9.
There you go. Can't beat an M9.
Yeah, now I get to talk about each one I use out of it. No, I'm not going to do that.
It's like three of the five were like multi-button pedals, right?
Well, they're easy, they're small,
yeah.
And they're, you know.
Do you think, I was curious about, like, we've kind of seen this, you know, I don't know if it's trend or whatever, but we kind of saw pedal boards getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and now it seems like they're getting smaller. Is that kind of like your thoughts as well? Like people are kind of going down to like multi-feature pedals or, you know, travel boards and things like that. Have you kind of seen that too among your artist friends?
It depends on how much you're traveling, how much you're moving. And if you have crew and like someone to help you carry it, then yeah, you bring everything. But in all of its sense of reality, that's not the case. So most of the time, like the first NAMM that we did, I brought my PT2 and the hard case, and I was carrying it around NAMM the entire time. So I'm like, what an idiot. Why am I doing this? Realistically, if you're a professional guitar player, you should be able to get all the sounds that you would need for a set in three pedals, four pedals. And if you can't, then you need to rethink your life. But
for me. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I was just to say, I saw a...
Now we just did it again.
Dang it. I saw a meme not too long ago that was two pedal boards, and one of them was like every Strymon pedal ever made and all this stuff. The other one was like a Boss Blues Driver and a couple other pedals, and the caption on the big one was plays three songs every weekend, and the one on the bottom was like plays 50 songs every night or whatever.
That's exactly it.
It is.
I like simple, so... I'm not a fiddler. I'm not a tinkerer. I don't like knobs. I just want to make it sound good and leave it alone. So the less, the better for me.
That's awesome, man. Well, give us, we've got a couple shameless plugs throughout, but give us the collective shameless plug, band names or band, links and stuff, your own personal, whatever you want to give out.
Cool. So Jessica Lynn is the artist I play for. You can go at Jessica Lynn Music on Instagram. Her Twitter is very confusing, so I'm not going to do that, but it's on the website, which is jessicalynnmusic.org, all one word, jessicalynnmusic.org. And you can see links to her social media, our EP and all the good stuff is on the website. And me personally, you can find me on Instagram at Stalach, Stalach. And that's where you'll find me most of the time. But you can also look up Steve Sterlacci on Facebook and, shoot me a friend request and talk to me on there.
Very cool, awesome. Man. We'll be sure to link all of those things up on the podcast page as well. So if you want to see more about it, just head over to the podcast page on the website.
Yeah, cool. Man. Thanks for coming on the show today. We appreciate having you. And we'll hopefully run into you at a NAMM show or some kind of concert at some point again. It's been a little while, but it'd be good to talk gear in person for sure. But appreciate you coming on, man. Thanks so much.
Definitely. Thank you for having me, guys.
All right. So thanks so much for checking out Tonecast number 13. On next week's show, we're going to be talking a little more in depth about our vintage custom Strat pickups. So we're excited to go kind of behind the scenes with the creation of those, kind of what we did with the wines, what styles of music they're good for, and kind of we'll share some sound clips and things like that with them. So look forward to having you on the Tonecast next week.